Chapter 56. Well, apostrophe apostrophe said little Mrs. Tibbs to herself, as she sat in the front parlor of the Coram Street mansion one morning, mending a piece of stair carpet off the first landings. Things have not turned out so badly either, and if I only get a favorable answer to the advertisement, we shall be full again. Apostrophe, Mrs. Tibbs resumed her occupation of making worsted lattice work in the carpet, anxiously listening to the twopenny postman, who was hammering his way down the street, at the rate of a penny a knock. The house was as quiet as possible. There was only one low sound to be heard. It was the unhappy Tibbs cleaning the gentleman's boots in the back kitchen, and accompanying himself with a buzzing noise, in wretched mockery of humming a tune. The postman drew near the house. He paused, so did Mrs. Tibbs. A knock, a bustle, a letter postpaid. T1. Presents comped. 2-1. T&T. 1. Begs to say that I see the advertisement and she will do herself the pleasure of calling on you at 12 o'clock tomorrow morning. T1. As to apologize to 1. T4. The shortness of the notice, but I hope it will not inconvenience you. I remain yours truly, Wednesday evening. Apostrophe, little Mrs. Tibbs perused the document, over and over again, and the more she read it, the more was she confused by the mixture of the first and third person, the substitution of the I for the T, I semicolon apostrophe, and the transition from the I, T apostrophe to the U. Apostrophe, the writing looked like a skein of thread in a tangle, and the note was ingeniously folded into a perfect square, with the direction squeezed up into the right-hand corner, as if it were ashamed of itself. The back of the epistle was pleasingly ornamented with a large red wafer, which, with the addition of divers ink stains, bore a marvelous resemblance to a black beetle trodden upon. One thing, however, was perfectly clear to the perplexed Mrs. Tibbs. Somebody was to call at 12. The drawing room was forthwith dusted for the third time that morning. Three or four chairs were pulled out of their places, and a corresponding number of books carefully upset, in order that there might be a due absence of formality. Down went the piece of stair carpet before noticed, and up ran Mrs. Tibbs to make herself tidy. Apostrophe, the clock of New St. Pancras Church struck 12, and the foundling, with laudable politeness, did the same 10 minutes afterwards. St. Something else struck the quarter, and then there arrived a single lady with a double knock, in a pelisse the color of the interior of a damson pie, a bonnet of the same, with a regular conservatory of artificial flowers, a white veil, and a green parasol, with a cobweb border. The visitor, who was very fat and red-faced, was shown into the drawing room. Mrs. Tibbs presented herself, and the negotiation commenced. I called in consequence of an advertisement, apostrophe said the stranger, in a voice, as if she had been playing a set of Pan's pipes for a fortnight without leaving off. Yes. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mrs. Tibbs, rubbing her hands very slowly, and looking the applicant full in the face, two things she always did on such occasions. Money isn't no object whatever to me, apostrophe said the lady, so much as living in a state of retirement and obtrusion. Apostrophe, Mrs. Tibbs, as a matter of course, acquiesced in such an exceedingly natural desire. I am constantly attended by a medical man, apostrophe resumed the pelisse wearer. I have been a shocking Unitarian for some time. I, indeed, have had very little peace since the death of Mr. Bloss. Apostrophe, Mrs. Tibbs looked at the relict of the departed Bloss, and thought he must have had very little peace in his time. Of course she could not say so, so she looked very sympathizing. I shall be a good deal of trouble to you, apostrophe said Mrs. Bloss, but, for that trouble I am willing to pay. I am going through a course of treatment which renders attention necessary. I have one mutton chop in bed at 8:30, and another at 10, every morning. Apostrophe, Mrs. Tibbs, as in duty bound, expressed the pity she felt for anybody placed in such a distressing situation. And the carnivorous Mrs. Boss proceeded to arrange the various preliminaries with wonderful dispatch. "Now mind," apostrophe said that lady, after terms were arranged, "I am to have the second floor front for my bedroom?" Apostrophe, "Yes, ma'am." Apostrophe, "And you'll find room for my little servant Agnes?" Apostrophe, "Oh, certainly." Apostrophe, "And I can have one of the cellars in the area for my bottled porter?" Apostrophe, "With the greatest pleasure. James shall get it ready for you by Saturday." Apostrophe, "And I'll join the company at the breakfast table on Sunday morning," apostrophe said Mrs. Boss. "I shall get up on purpose." Apostrophe, "Very well," apostrophe returned Mrs. Tibbs, in her most amiable tone. For satisfactory references had been given and required, apostrophe, and it was quite certain that the newcomer had plenty of money. "It's rather singular," apostrophe continued Mrs. Tibbs, with what was meant for a most bewitching smile, "that we have a gentleman now with us, who is in a very delicate state of health, a Mr. Gobler. His apartment is the back drawing room." Apostrophe, "The next room?" Apostrophe, inquired Mrs. Boss. "The next room," apostrophe repeated the hostess. "How very promiscuous!" Apostrophe, ejaculated the widow. "He hardly ever gets up," apostrophe said Mrs. Tibbs in a whisper. "Lor!" Apostrophe, cried Mrs. Boss, in an equally low tone. "And when he is up," apostrophe said Mrs. Tibbs, "we never can persuade him to go to bed again." Apostrophe, "Dear me!" Apostrophe, said the astonished Mrs. Boss, drawing her chair nearer Mrs. Tibbs. "What is his complaint?" Apostrophe, "Why, the fact is," apostrophe replied Mrs. Tibbs, with a most communicative air, "he has no stomach whatever." Apostrophe, "No what?" Apostrophe, inquired Mrs. Boss, with a look of the most indescribable alarm. "No stomach," apostrophe repeated Mrs. Tibbs, with a shake of the head. "Lord bless us! What an extraordinary case!" Apostrophe gasped Mrs. Boss, as if she understood the communication in its literal sense, and was astonished that a gentleman without a stomach finding it necessary to board anywhere. "When I say he has no stomach," apostrophe explained the chatty little Mrs. Tibbs, "I mean that his digestion is so much impaired, and his interior so deranged, that his stomach is not of the least use to him. In fact, it's an inconvenience." Apostrophe, "Never heard such a case in my life." Apostrophe, exclaimed Mrs. Boss. "Why, he's worse than I am." Apostrophe, "Oh, yes." Apostrophe, replied Mrs. Tibbs, "Certainly." Apostrophe, she said this with great confidence, for the damson pellis suggested that Mrs. Boss, at all events, was not suffering under Mr. Gobler's complaint. "You have quite incited my curiosity," apostrophe said Mrs. Boss, as she rose to depart. "How I long to see him." Apostrophe, "He generally comes down once a week," apostrophe replied Mrs. Tibbs. "I dare say you'll see him on Sunday." Apostrophe, with this consolatory promise, Mrs. Boss was obliged to be contented. She accordingly walked slowly down the stairs, detailing her complaints all the way, and Mrs. Tibbs followed her, uttering an exclamation of compassion at every step. James, who looked very gritty, for he was cleaning the knives, fell up the kitchen stairs, and opened the street door, and, after mutual farewells, Mrs. Boss slowly departed, down the shady side of the street. It is almost superfluous to say that the lady whom we have just shown out at the street door, and whom the two female servants are now inspecting from the second floor windows, was exceedingly vulgar, ignorant, and selfish. Her deceased better half had been an eminent cork cutter, in which capacity he had amassed a decent fortune. He had no relative but his nephew, and no friend but his cook. The former had the insolence one morning to ask for the loan of £15, and, by way of retaliation, he married the latter next day. He made a will immediately afterwards, containing a burst of honest indignation against his nephew, who supported himself, and two sisters on 100 LA year, and a bequest of his whole property to his wife. He fell ill after breakfast, and died after dinner. There is a mantelpiece-looking tablet in a civic parish church, setting forth his virtues, and deploring his loss. He never dishonored a bill, or gave away a halfpenny. The relict and sole executrix of this noble-minded man was an odd mixture of shrewdness and simplicity, liberality, and meanness. Bred up as she had been, she knew no mode of living so agreeable as a boarding-house. And having nothing to do, and nothing to wish for, she naturally imagined she must feel an impression which was most assiduously promoted by her medical attendant, Dr. Wasky, and her handmaid Agnes. Both of whom, doubtless for good reasons, encouraged all her extravagant notions. Since the catastrophe recorded in the last chapter, Mrs. Tipps had been very shy of young lady boarders. Her present inmates were all lords of the creation, and she availed herself of the opportunity of their assemblage at the dinner table to announce the expected arrival of Mrs. Bloss. The gentleman received the communication with stoical indifference, and Mrs. Tipps devoted all her energies to prepare for the reception of the valetudinarian. The second floor front was scrubbed, and washed, and flanneled, till the wet went through to the drawing-room ceiling. Clean white counterpanes, and curtains, and napkins, water bottles as clear as crystal, blue jugs, and mahogany furniture, added to the splendor, and increased the comfort, of the apartment. The warming pan was in constant requisition, and a fire lighted in the room every day. The chattels of Mrs. Bloss were forwarded by installments. First, there came a large hamper of Guinness's stout, and an umbrella, then, a train of trunks, then, a pair of clogs and a bandbox, then, an easy chair with an air cushion, then, a variety of suspicious-looking packages, and though last not least Mrs. Bloss and Agnes, the latter in a cherry-colored merino dress, open-work stockings, and shoes with sandals, like a disguised Columban. The installation of the Duke of Wellington, as Chancellor of the University of Oxford, was nothing, in point of bustle and turmoil, to the installation of Mrs. Bloss in her new quarters. True, there was no bright doctor of civil law to deliver a classical address on the occasion, but there were several other old women present who spoke quite as much to the purpose and understood themselves equally well. The chop-eater was so fatigued with the process of removal that she declined leaving her room until the following morning, so a mutton chop, pickle, a pill, a pint bottle of stout, and other medicines were carried upstairs for her consumption. "Why, what do you think, ma'am?" inquired the inquisitive Agnes of her mistress, after they had been in the house some 3 hours. "What do you think, ma'am? The lady of the house is married." "Married." Said Mrs. Bloss, taking the pill and a draught of Guinness. "Married. Impossible." "She is indeed, ma'am," returned the Columban. "And her husband, ma'am, lives he lives in the kitchen, ma'am." "In the kitchen." "Yes, ma'am. And he the housemaid says, he never goes into the parlor except on Sundays, and that Miss Tipps makes him clean the gentleman's boots, and that he cleans the windows too, sometimes, and that one morning early, when he was in the front balcony cleaning the drawing-room windows, he called out to a gentleman on the opposite side of the way, who used to live here, Mr. Calton, sir, how are you?" Here the attendant laughed till Mrs. Bloss was in serious apprehension of her chuckling herself into a fit. "Well, I never." Said Mrs. Bloss. "Yes. And please, ma'am, the servants gives him gin and water sometimes. And then he cries, and says he hates his wife and the boarders, and wants to tickle them." "Tickle the boarders." Exclaimed Mrs. Bloss, seriously alarmed. No, ma'am, not the boarders, the servants. Apostrophe, oh, is that all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Bloss, quite satisfied. He wanted to kiss me as I came up the kitchen stairs, just now, apostrophe, said Agnes, indignantly. But I gave it him, a little wretch. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this intelligence was but too true. A long course of snubbing and neglect, his days spent in the kitchen, and his nights in the turn-up bedstead, had completely broken the little spirit that the unfortunate volunteer had ever possessed. He had no one to whom he could detail his injuries but the servants, and they were almost of necessity his chosen confidants. It is no less strange than true, however, that the little weaknesses which he had incurred, most probably during his military career, seemed to increase as his comforts diminished. He was actually a sort of journeyman Giovanni of the basement story. The next morning, being Sunday, breakfast was laid in the front parlor at 10 o'clock. 9 was the usual time, but the family always breakfasted an hour later on Sabbath. Tibbs enrobed himself in his Sunday costume, a black coat, and exceedingly short, thin trousers, with a very large white waistcoat, white stockings and cravat, and blucher boots, and mounted to the parlor aforesaid. Nobody had come down, and he amused himself by drinking the contents of the milk pot with a teaspoon. A pair of slippers were heard descending the stairs. Tibbs flew to a chair, and a stern-looking man, of about 50, with very little hair on his head, and a Sunday paper in his hand, entered the room. "Good morning, Mr. Evenson," apostrophe said Tibbs, very humbly, with something between a nod and a bow. "How do you do, Mr. Tibbs?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, replied he of the slippers, as he sat himself down, and began to read his paper without saying another word. "Is Mr. Wispoddle in town today, do you know, sir?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Tibbs, just for the sake of saying something. "I should think he was," apostrophe replied the stern gentleman. "He was Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.